Thanks, Chris. All right, if you have your Bibles with you or your electronic device with you, you might want to go ahead and turn in your Bibles or device to the book of Ruth. If you're not sure where the book of Ruth is, start with Genesis, flip past Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, and Ruth. Very good. Last week we introed Ruth and we covered the first five verses. Not because it took so long to cover the first five verses, but you need to understand what is going on during the time of Ruth. During the time of Ruth, the judges are in full swing. When God established Israel, he put them in the land. He wanted them to look different than every other nation. And when he put them in that land, one of the ways that they didn't look like other nations is they didn't have a king that ruled over them with authority, creating laws and creating rules. Instead, God created the rules and gave them to man in the desert, the wilderness. Then he brought them into the land, and God, assuming the role as king, put in place judges. That's why the book is called Judges that precedes Ruth. And these judges were supposed to help the country make decisions and follow him throughout this period of time. And as long as there was a judge in position that was ruling on behalf of God, things prospered. In fact, we talked about whenever you read the Old Testament, two of the chapters you need to know fairly well, or you need to at least be able to refer back to, are Leviticus 26. This is worth writing in your book or your notebook or your Bible even. Leviticus 26 or Deuteronomy 28. Because both of those are lists. Leviticus was given during the beginning of their time in the wilderness. Deuteronomy was given at their end before they went to the land. So Deuteronomy covers the same thing as Leviticus. The point of that is that if they follow God, God was going to bless Israel so that the rest of the world that's around them would see God blessing them because of their obedience and say, who is this God? So it led them to be a priest of nations. However, because he wanted and desired Israel to be a priest of nations, if they did not follow God and they did what was right in their own eyes, their blessings would go away, and in fact, curses would come on them. Curses like war. Curses like wild animals coming out of nowhere and attacking people and property and crops. Famine. There would be no rain. Things would happen which would cause them to need other countries and thus interact with them until they had a judging place that would also let them follow their king, which is God. So it was a barometer for them. The way that God gave them blessings was a barometer with them of whether or not they were being faithful. Ruth happened right in the beginning of this. And when the book of Ruth starts, it starts with this lady named Naomi. Not Naomi, Chris. Nay. The old English word, nay. Meaning no, right? Okay, so Naomi. I think the book of Ruth can be broken down this way. The beginning starts with nay, meaning no. If you're a Jewish reader or Hebrew reader of the Bible at all, you would read the first chapter and the first few stories about Ruth, and you would think, oh no, no, nay, 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 nay. And you would get down a little ways, and we're going to see it today, until you come to the greatest nay in the whole book. It's when Ruth confronts Naomi. Naomi's trying to get her to go back, and Ruth says, nay. And we're going to talk about that. It's a good nay. And it begins the transition of when she shows up in town, and people are like, oh, Naomi's back. We're so excited. And their attitude is, oh. But Naomi's is still, nay. Don't call me Naomi. Call me bitter woman. And then it transitions. It transitions, which we're going to see today, where Ruth has an idea, and she says, oh, we're in the land. Oh. Maybe I should go out and glean. Oh, and Ruth goes, okay, huh? And then she goes into land, and Boaz shows up. He's like, oh, who's this? And everybody's going, oh, until she comes back with this a bunch of barley, where Naomi's attitude finally changes to, oh. You see how Naomi works really well. Till you tell them you get to the end of the book, and Naomi goes, me? Me? And everybody says, me? Boaz is proposed to in the middle of the night by a lady that just happens to come up on him while he's sleeping. And he's like, me? You know, it's one of those things. So you see how this works. You will never forget the book of Ruth if you remember, nay, oh, me? So I want you to remember that. I'm so glad this is not being videoed. All right. Number two. You ready for this? Naomi is the only one that has emotional changes in the book. Ruth is steady. She is the same person. Boaz is steady, same person. Even the people they interact with out in the fields, they're the same person. They follow Boaz. Even the person at the end that we're going to find out in a couple of weeks, he's pretty steady. He's the same person, which causes him to make a different decision. The only person that really changes in this book is Naomi, which makes you ask why. Okay? So last week, we covered Naomi. Naomi, we'll read through these first five verses because they're short. I'm not going to cover everything I covered last week, but I am going to show you what happens. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. If you know Leviticus 26, you know that one of the curses is if they don't follow God and don't have a judge, is that famine would happen, which caused people that read this to say, nay, oh no, that's bad, because Israel's not following God. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. If you know how Moab was created, the reader would say, oh no, nay, right here. Because Moab's country was created out of disobedience. Disobedience. When God actually, Jesus pre-incarnate, means before he became as flesh and blood, came as an angelic being that looked like a man with two angels with him. They went down to Sodom and Gomorrah to actually warn them and bring a curse on them. And the reason they went down there, though, was to destroy it. And they met up with Lot, which was Abraham's nephew, and said to him, you need to get out of here because there's not enough faithful people in this town for God to restore it, because they only had to find 10. And if you look at the story, you have Abraham who's negotiating this, and he's thinking, okay, I got Lot, I got his wife, I got his two daughters. They're engaged. That's six. If they can find four people that are faithful to God, then we can save this country or city. They couldn't find four in two cities, Sodom or Gomorrah. So what happened was, as he said, you got to get out of here. And on their way out, it says that Lot's wife, while the city was being destroyed, turned back longing for the city, missing the city that God had just deemed himself, had just said, this place is so unrighteous that I've got to destroy it, looks back longing at it, and she turns to a pillar of salt. Lot no longer has a wife for which to provide offspring, but he's got his two daughters. They run to the town of Zoar, which they beg to go to, but then they end up in the hills, up in this cave. They're not even sure what's going on. They don't know what populations, what cities are around anymore. They're distraught. And it's these two daughters, and then it's Lot, the father, are stuck in this cave. And the daughters think to themselves, how are we ever going to find someone to help our seed and help our family preserve their name? And unfaithfully, instead of waiting on God, instead of repenting and turning back to him, they take things in their own hand. They get their father drunk, and they both commit incest, which leads to descendants that create the countries of Moab and the Ammonites. So when Naomi and her husband flee to Moab instead of the promised land, and repenting and turning back to God, the reader says, nay. Oh no, that's bad. Verse 2, the man's name was Elimelech. His wife's name was Naomi. The names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. We talked about their two sons' names also. The two sons' names, Mahlon means sickly, probably identifies something with his birth. And Chilion actually means really frail. So it makes you wonder, why would you ever take two kids who are named sickly and frail to cross the Dead Sea to go over into this wilderness land of Moab? Even a person reading that would say, nay, that's bad. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem. We talked about Ephrathites, meaning they were probably a clan within a tribe. But the reader would see that and it would give them a hint, if they knew anything about Jewish customs, that King David himself was an Ephrathite. All right. So there's already a hint there from Bethlehem, Judah. And they went to Moab and lived there. Now, Elimelech, verse 3, Naomi's husband died, which the reader would say, nay. Oh, no, that's terrible. And she was left with her two sons. But they married Moabite women. The reader would say, oh, no, nay. And one named Orpah and the other Ruth. And when you read the name Orpah, you think, nay, who would ever name their daughter Orpah? No, just kidding. Orpah means back of neck. Her name means back of neck, which you have to think probably leads to some future explanation in this story that she left and walked away. But Ruth's name actually means friend. So even as you're reading these names in this book, you come to Ruth's name and you think, oh, that's different. At least somebody named their daughter well. All right. After they lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion died, which the reader would say, oh no, nay. And Naomi was left without her two sons or her husband, which the reader would say, nay. That's the introduction to the story of Ruth. It's as bad as it gets. It's rough. Obviously, Naomi is going through something. And can you blame her? She's lost everything. She's lost her family. She's lost her future. And what else has she lost? Her family, her future, and food and provision. Who's going to work for them? Who's going to help them out? It's a rough time, which brings us to verse 6, is where we start today. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food from them, she and her two daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. So just like Naomi right here, you see that the author is introing an O. But Naomi doesn't see it like an O necessarily. But the reader says, oh, maybe there is a future. Maybe there is provision and food. Maybe there is a chance for family. It leads you to those things as a reader, but Naomi does not see this yet. So this is the first O in here. And with her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living for 15 years, mind you, and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Most likely, they would have crossed the Dead Sea. They would have gone to the northern territory of Moab, which is this Arnon River. They would have gone down the riverbed and gone to the Dead Sea. If you've ever been to the Dead Sea, you will know that there are these cliffs that just drop, and then there's flat land, and the Dead Sea, which is the lowest point in all of the world, is down there. You know also that the Dead Sea is filled with salt. So much salt, in fact, that it's impossible to sink. You can drown, but you cannot sink in the Dead Sea. And in fact, at this time of year, it's one of the furthest times away from the storms that happen in the winter that provide water to come into the land. And so the Dead Sea is pretty shallow at this time. And when it's shallow, you'll see an interesting little geographical situation, which you can see on your computer right now if you get on it. But about a little bit lower than halfway. So this is north, right? Moab is over here. This is Moab. There's cliffs here, cliffs here. You go down, and there's this little land bridge that comes across. And it goes almost all the way across. And this is very, very, very shallow. So in the middle of the Dead Sea, you can cross over pretty easily. And that's the way most people would have gone. The other option is to go north, and they would have gone through some tribal territory of other Israelites and crossed over about where Jericho is, just like many people did later. I actually think they went through the Dead Sea because they're going to Bethlehem, which is about right here. And so it would have been harder to go that way than it would have been to cross that. But what you know about that territory is that it's very dry, and there's typically not very much vegetation until you get pretty close to Bethlehem, just south of Bethlehem, and you go past a couple of things. The other thing about Bethlehem is actually surprisingly close to Samson and the Valley of Sorek, where he was. And so I think that this was about the time of Samson, so he could have been the one that brought back in the peace to Israel at this time. And then Ruth would have come in with Naomi at this time. So that's how they made their way back. And you have Naomi, Orpah, and Ruth going together. Verse 8, then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Nay, go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness, and you have, as you have showed me kindness to your dead husbands and to me." This is a blessing, and it's also a prayer. This is the first real decision Naomi makes, other than turning back, is that she decides that it's too much for her to bear. I think she comes to the cliffs, and she's overlooking the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea, and it reminds her of what just had happened, or some of the tragedy she's experienced with the loss of her husband and her sons. And she's looking at it, and she's about to cross over into the Promised Land, and she realizes these Moabite daughters don't belong necessarily over there. Yes, they married into the family, but what can she really provide for them? She's hoping that God will provide for her by going back, but she doesn't know that she can support these two daughters-in-law. And she offers a blessing to them, and she says, "Go back, each of you, because of the kindness you've shown, and you've shown kindness not only to me, but your husbands." And she wants the Lord to show them kindness. This word kindness pops up. Does anybody have a different translation in their Bible other than kindness here? It's okay if you don't. I didn't know if anybody had something different. But that's what the book of Ruth is about. It's about the kindness of God, but His sovereignty also. And so that's a pretty big one. When she offers kindness, that's the only thing she has to give them, is a blessing from God at this time. And she says, verse 9, "May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." Then she kissed them goodbye, wept aloud, and she said to her, and said to her, "We will go back with you to your people." And they wept aloud and said, they responded. That confused me. But they say nay right here. "We will go back with you to your people." Verse 11, "But Naomi said, 'Return home, my daughters.'" Another nay. "No. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Nay, return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand is turned against me." Everything she says here is, this is a bad idea for you to return with me. So there's a whole bunch of nays. No, 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 don't return with me. The other thing is, Naomi reveals her deep sense of loss, because she's probably in her late 40s. And so at that time, in your early 50s was your life expectancy in certain parts of that country. She doesn't think she has that much time left, not to mention childbearing years to provide someone for her daughters. She thinks there's no hope. And she can't fathom a way that these daughters would be cared for within her family. And she's going back. And so if you look at that, her daughters are probably approaching the age, let's say they got married at the earliest at 15. Let's just say they got married at 15. Husbands probably passed away. They could be approaching early 30s, mid 30s. So even if she provided a son, a couple of sons, they wouldn't even reach age to be able to provide them offspring until after they're out of a position or late in a position to be able to provide children. She thinks there's no possible way. And it reflects back, if you think about it, it goes immediately back to what we even started this whole thing with last week when we talked about Abraham and his wife. How is it even possible that God's going to provide you a blessing? In fact, I don't see how God could provide you a blessing, which she says, because God's hand is clearly against me. Naomi's defeated. She's absolutely defeated. She has one thing to offer. That's a blessing to return. as she returns home and hopes there's a place for her, at least that she can die peacefully in her homeland. You get a deep sense of remorse, and you wonder, I'm not a doctor, and I'm not going to go too far into this, but you get a sense that she's got to be going through some sort of depression. I think what we're going to see in here is how you can minister to someone that's going through that. And that's who Ruth is in this story early on. So let's introduce you to Ruth. Verse 14. At this, they wept aloud again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. Orpah decides to go back at this. This is not a negative on Orpah, and I think this is the reason her name means back of neck. I'm not sure if that was actually her name or if it was a reflection of the part she plays. But she leaves to go back. It's not meant to be a negative towards Orpah here. Instead, I think this comparison is meant to show how amazing Ruth is. It's not meant to beat down Orpah. It's meant to elevate Ruth, who honestly is one of the most honorable people in the entire book of the Bible. She is absolutely amazing. So, the word used there is clung to her. It's the same word used in Genesis 2:24 when it talks about the woman that was made for man. That you would cling to a husband. She would leave and cleave. You've probably heard that. It's the exact same word. And so this action that Ruth demonstrates is one of unbelievable devotion right there. When Ruth is feeling like she has nobody, the action expressed what she was going to do is that when Naomi felt like she had no one, Ruth said, "You've got me," through action. Now watch what she says. "Look," said Naomi, "your sister-in-law is going back to her people and to her gods. Go back with her." And Ruth gives the greatest no in the history of Scripture to some extent. Or at least this book, Ruth, right? Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you." And then she does something which I would say, if you read the Hebrew, you would think this is amazing. She speaks in the simplest, most clarifying way possible. I would call this Hebrew caveman language. This is how you talk to a dog. This is how you talk to someone that's so confused they have trouble listening. She speaks in noun, verb, and that's it. There are no other possible words you could insert in there. And what she says is she says, "You go," pointing to her. I believe it's this way, where you go. But she just says, "You go, I go." Caveman, right? "You stay, I stay." Meaning wherever you end up, I end up. "Your people, my people." Whoever your people are, those are going to be my people from now on. You can't get rid of me. And then she makes a statement, "Your God, my God," which is a declaration of faith in her God. The life that Naomi lived wasn't fruitless. The life that Naomi lived was clear that her daughters loved her. And they knew the God that she lived for. And when she says, "My God has abandoned me," Ruth responds to that person going through that situation, "I won't abandon you, and also I'm following that God." It's an unbelievable encouragement to Naomi, and she says it with such clarity. The next verse is amazing. When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. She was just quiet. Sometimes the best thing for someone that's going through a deep trauma and depression is they just need the presence of people and silence. Naomi wasn't sure about many things, but what she was sure about was that Ruth was going to be there with her. That's an unbelievable expression of love. And that's putting your money where your mouth is. She clung to her, no matter what. Verse 19. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them, and the women exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" This is the "Oh, look at this. So look at this, it's Naomi, and they are excited here. There's a debate whether or not they are excited, they're not excited. I am certain they are excited. There are other books of the Bible that express this, but one specifically is the Attitude that uses the same phrase as Genesis 43, when Joseph meets his little brother Benjamin, who he's never met before, and he says in excitement, "Wait, is this your youngest brother?" He has a brother, and he finds out it's from his same mom. Like, it's this longing to be together. And actually, it says Joseph went away and wept because he had this plan. But there's this desire to be with him. And Naomi stops him. She says, "Nay, don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why would you ever call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me, and the Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." The word she uses for God twice in that phrase is sovereign one, Shaddai. The one that's in control of this whole situation has afflicted me. So call me the name that shows that God is against me. Bitter and Mara. And you just think, man, she is going through something. Verse 22, so Naomi returned to Moab, accompanied by Ruth, the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. The first chapter starts like this. In the time of Judges, there was a famine in the land. And you think, nay. By the end of the first chapter, you get to this full barley harvest. And you think, oh, this might actually work out for her. Naomi does not see that yet. Because to get to Bethlehem, Bethlehem is up on a hill. You have to pass by fields and fields and fields to get up to that hill in Bethlehem, which means you had to pass by all this barley harvest and all these grains and all these people that are reaping and harvesting at that time. And so she has to see how fruitful the land is, but it still does not change her attitude to what's going on. She's still distraught. And sometimes whenever you're going through things like this or you encounter someone going through this, it's hard for them to see what God is doing because they're so focused on what's happening in their lives. And her identity isn't wrapped up in the fact of what God could do. Her identity is wrapped up in what God has allowed. And she doesn't even see this yet as a redemptive process for her. And it's hard. And I don't think she should be able to see it, honestly. I think that's why God put Ruth in her life, to walk with her until she can see it and to provide hope for her. So at the end of chapter 1, the chapter of nays, it ends with one of the biggest O's. One of the biggest verses you see in there, which is a hint for a reader that knows the whole book, is that Naomi says, "I can't bear a son for you. You have no hope because I can't bear a son for you." Well, later on, Ruth is probably going to bear a son for Naomi to give her hope. That's amazing. It's amazing, and God answers that. Also, her blessing and her prayer is to what? May God deal with you kindly in the same way you've dealt with kindness towards me and my sons. And God does that. He answers Naomi's prayer. In the midst of depression, in the midst of hurt, in the midst of not knowing what's going on, God still hears the prayer. Even though Naomi doesn't realize it then. Fertility's in the air. As people harvest their barley, perhaps fertility will be restored in Naomi as well through her daughter-in-law, Ruth, the only one she has left. Chapter 2, the beginning of O. We have moved past Nay. We're moving into O. You ready? Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing, meaning prominent, from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. Well, we have three good O's there, all right? A relative on her husband's side. Oh, she's got family still alive and just happens to be there. And he was an upright man, a man of standing, one highly respected. That's another O. Then from the clan of Elimelech, which we said earlier, and his name was Boaz. And they introduce Boaz here, but they don't actually introduce you to Boaz until a little later. But you know already you need to look out for this Boaz guy because he's a good guy. And even the reader, as they read through this, would think, man, if she could just get around Boaz, maybe Boaz could help her out. And so there's an introduction to it. And the reader says, oh, first, right? Verse 2, and Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone whose eyes I find favor. Naomi said to her, go ahead, my daughter. So it's not Naomi that has a suggestion. Naomi experiencing this deep pain and this hurt, she can't offer a suggestion. She has nothing else to offer. She gave her blessing. That was it. And now she is in this land and she is hurting. And the person that is walking with someone that's hurting, oftentimes you don't say, hey, what do you need me to do? Because that person does not have the capability or the wherewithal to be able to even think through what all they need. In fact, it's the little things they forget about. One of the hardest things to do and what you shouldn't do. Let's go to tip time. If someone is going through something, don't call them up and say, hey, by the way, I'm praying for you and let me know if there's anything I can do for you. That's too much work for them. It's too much. Just do something to show that you're there. Bring your lawnmower over, cut their grass. Say, knock on the door, say, hey, I'm here to cut your grass. I don't want you to have to worry about this. And they don't. Bring them a meal. Hey, I don't want you to have to worry about where your next meal is. You can put it in the freezer, or you can have it right now, or you can toss it out, but it's there. Go and help. Go and serve. Go and help those people that are going through stuff. Take things off their plate instead of giving them another responsibility in the midst of this. That's what Ruth does here. Ruth says, let me go into the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone whose eyes I find favor. And Naomi says, go ahead, my daughter. It's an easy decision. She sets her up for a T-ball. And if it happens to work out, guess what? Naomi's experienced success. It's incredibly kind. And it says, verse 3, so she went out and entered a field and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Well, look at that. In fact, if you read through that, you'll read a phrase in there that says, in my Bible, it actually says, she went out and entered and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out is important. She was working in the field. As it turned out. Does anybody have anything other than as it turned out?
She happened.
She happened. Anybody have anything else? Okay. As it turned out, or she happened. Let me tell you what it says in the Hebrew. In the Hebrew, it has the word luck, or next to another word, luck. And whenever two words are put together that they're the same, like holy, holy, or truly, truly, I tell you, or any double words together, it means that the first word emphasizes the second word. So you can read it as luckily by luckinstance, this happens, or chancely by chance, this person just happened to be there. Or it would say something like, it just so happened that she ended up in the exact same field that I just mentioned this was a good guy about before. This is a wink, wink from the author to the reader. Hey, guess what happened? Ruth just happened to stumble upon. Now, Naomi did not give her a suggestion of which field to go into. She just said, go ahead. Ruth didn't know who was a part of their family and who wasn't. Ruth just went ahead. Somebody we were introduced to earlier, whose nickname is Sovereign, just happened to initiate this. And maybe, I don't know, wink, wink, just so happened, God's in control of this whole thing. And even in the midst of the biggest nays and hurts, there's a, oh, maybe God hasn't forgotten about me. That's what's happening right here. And you as the reader get to know that before Naomi does, which is kind of fun. And Ruth. Verse 4. Just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. The Lord be with you. Okay. They all responded, and the Lord bless you as well. Okay. First of all, you've got the leader there. He's got upstanding character. We know about it. And he loves the Lord. He's following the Lord faithfully. Remember, this is in the time of Judges. And he is acknowledging the one that's the Lord. Remember, in the book of Judges, the phrase that you get over and over again is everybody did what was right in their own eyes. Boaz is distinctively different than all those other leaders because he walks up and the very first thing he says isn't, "Hey, are y'all doing a good job of my crops? Hey, have you taken out the trash yet? Hey, have you cooked my dinner yet?" No, he doesn't say any of that because it probably is lunchtime, but he says, "May the Lord be with you." And they are either influenced because of Boaz's influence in their life or they're sucking up to the boss. I don't know whichever one it is, and they say, "The Lord be with you." Let me be honest with you. Sometimes in church, the preacher will get up and say, "The Lord be with you," and other people say, "And the Lord be with you too." I think some of the people out there believe it, and I think some of the people out there have just been trained, that's what you say. But it doesn't matter, because this is about Boaz and his character, and he is representing and reflecting the very thing Israel's supposed to do to the rest of the nations. Be a priest to the nations and lead them to obedience in the Lord. The very first introduction you get of Boaz is, this man loves God. And he'd be a good catch if Ruth can somehow work that out. Boaz asks the overseer of his harvesters, "Who does this young woman belong to?" Well, that's good, because Naomi is called young here, meaning she might be of childbearing age. And what is she doing out here as well? The other thing is, Boaz is also a little bit older. And as he's walking through here, he knows there's a young lady that's gleaning behind his harvesters. And he recognizes her. Now, you would read past that young woman and you would think, oh, he just acknowledges there's a young woman. But what the author is trying to say is that this woman has a chance. Does that make sense? Like, she has a chance. And you'll see later on, she does have a chance. Verse 6, the overseer replied, "She is a Moabite," oh no, "who came back from Moab with Naomi." Oh, that's pretty nice. "She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.'" Okay, she's polite. Oh, that's pretty nice. "She came into the field and she has remained here from morning till now, except a short rest in the shelter." She's a hard worker. And she's here not only on her behalf, but on Naomi, who actually Boaz knows is related to her. So there you go. So this person cares for Boaz's family without him even knowing it. And she's working very hard to help her. Not only that, she left her country without her husband to come with Naomi all the way here to resettle. So that says something about Ruth. In fact, a half day's reputation has built up that. And so people admire Ruth, at least for what she's done. So Boaz says to her, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in any other field and don't go away from here." All right. First, we got to talk about gleaning. She was allowed to glean in the field. Gleaning was a social safety net in Israel at this time. It was actually issued in the Old Testament as an act of worship in the Feast of Weeks, which actually will come up in a few minutes, the Pentecost, meaning that there was a couple rules for the person that's wealthy and has experienced from prosperity. Don't cut the edges of your field. Don't cut the corners of your field. Don't go back and pick up what your gatherers haven't picked up, but leave it there for the poor and the strangers, meaning the foreigners, that walk into this country to need help. Now, a couple of things that are not included in the instructions. We do not know how big the edges or the corners are. It never says leave this much. It's open. It also says, it doesn't tell them how much to bundle up in a bundle and leave behind. That's open for discernment. Meaning, the wealthy person or the person that's been given much probably should leave behind what's needed based off of who's around. How much of a corner do you leave? Well, it depends on what the need is of the people around. So if Boaz is good at this, this shows unbelievable faithfulness. You can read about gleaning in Leviticus 19:10. It talks about vineyards and corners, just like I said. Leviticus 23:22 connects the festival to Pentecost, which ultimately the church fulfills. So our lives should look like the gleaning of the field. As we work, we offer our gifts. We offer our blessings to help others that are less fortunate. How neat was it that the Missions Day falls on this day as we talk about this? The reason we were able to go be a part of what God's doing around the world is because you gave and you prayed, and people were able to hear about the gospel in places where they don't have an opportunity to sit in a class like this. In fact, most churches in Eastern Europe that I've been a part of are about half the size of this class. There's not even a faith family big enough around to really help people out. I know in the Czech Republic, we had some incredible guests that came in that helped out last year. And he asked how big our church was, and he was blown away. He said, there's only 17 in my church. And that's fairly normative to some extent. A large church in Eastern Europe right now is about 200 people. That's the mega church. That's the one that's on TBN with the big pink hair. That's that one. We have a responsibility as Boazes in this world to leave behind the corners and edges to help out. The other thing that's interesting about this section where it talks about gleaning is that it doesn't say go bundle it up for them and give it to them. It doesn't say cut the corners and set them aside. It leaves behind an opportunity for them to work for it, which preserves not only their health and their provision, but it preserves their dignity. They're equipping them. Inadvertently, here's where my mind goes and Scripture doesn't. If I were Boaz, I'd be watching who comes out, seeing how often they do it, and I'd let that be my LinkedIn recruiting tool. I'm hiring based off of that. I'm hiring a Ruth. I'm not hiring a Deborah. I'm hiring, you know, like those are the people I would recruit. It actually provides for him as well. And so it's amazing how God has instructed that and put that together. A couple of other things you need to know about gleaning. It costs the landowner money to leave that behind. He could make more, but he's taken a sacrifice. The wealthy were expected to provide, but not be forced. It was an act of selfless obedience. In a sense, it was worship. So connecting it to a festival makes a lot of sense. Obviously, no amount is determined. It acknowledges that the gift is from God, not something they did themselves. But they are worshiping by leaving it behind. There is an expectation that the poor worked for it. The foreigner worked for it, not ran off or stealing it, but they were welcomed onto the land to be able to do it. However, not everybody saw this as a welcoming thing. And so Boaz issues another statement. He says, stay here, I'm back in verse 8, with the women who work for me. Watch the fields where the men are harvesting and follow along after the women. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get drink from the water jars the men have filled. This is unbelievable. This is a promotion. Half day work and she gets promoted. She was gleaning behind the women. And the words actually, even it says after the women, he actually says, why don't you come up? The way this works is we have reapers. Reapers are the one that knock down the grain. Okay. Then you have the gatherers or the workers. And typically those are the women. They're the ones that grab it up and bundle it. And they carry it behind, right? And so what she's saying is don't follow in behind them, but get up in line with those gatherers and bundlers. Can you imagine what she can come back with if she's able to get first dibs on what falls? That's amazing. And so he promotes her to that. Then he says, not only that, but you know what you can do? Is I'm telling the men not to allow you to be harmed in any kind of way. So the men that are the reapers, they were also the bodyguards out at that time. It could be as bad as someone taking advantage of them sexually, but probably more likely it was more of a bullying thing. Like people would run up and they would probably knock over the woman gleaning, take all her stuff that she worked all day on, and ran off with it. What actually is one of the crimes you actually see in modern day cities with day workers. They'll get off work after a hard day's work, and one of the scariest places for them is where they get dropped off. Because people know they just stepped off with cash. And a lot of times that's where people attack them with drugs, and they attack them with prostitution and other things. So as you drive past those places, you can pray. Pray over those prices. And then she says, then he says something amazing. The water that those Israelite men draw, I'm making an emphasis on this. You, a Moabite woman, can drink from that water. Culturally, here's what happened. Women drew water for men. Foreigners drew water for Israelites. He is saying, you get first dibs as an equal and an elevated servant. You see Boaz's character just come out. And a Hebrew person that reads that, or Jewish person that reads that, they get it and they say, oh my. Oh, that's good. That's amazing. But it's not over for her. And next week when we come back, man, I'm going to show you how much better it gets for Ruth. And when she shows up to Naomi's house later on, Naomi's response is, oh! She is blown away with the exclamation point. She is blown away. In one day's work, Ruth comes back with a week's worth of groceries. That's amazing for two of them. Maybe God hasn't forgotten them after all. It's extraordinary. She's blown away, and she's experiencing the blessing. Right now, she's in the middle of it. And I think she recognizes it. And I think Boaz recognizes it. But I wonder if the workers really recognize it. Do you have trouble recognizing when God is working in the midst of answering prayers? Isn't it normal for us to look back on situations and say, oh, I'm glad it worked out that way? There are a lot of things in life we would have never chosen if they let us write our own books of the way our life worked out. But a lot of those things that happen end up being the most significant moments in our life of where God's changing us and developing us. One thing we can do is we can pray that God allows us to see those things as they arrive so we can give Him praise for it in the midst of it. And maybe, if we're obedient enough, we can be like Ruth and we can walk with people that can't see it because the tragedy is so big and be a light to them and bless them the way that Ruth is going to end up blessing Naomi. Not because Ruth is amazing, but because the God that she professed faith in, your God, my God, is the God that provides blessings and the God that's ultimately going to provide for us the greatest blessing of all time when we get to experience eternal life with Him apart from sin and danger forever and ever. And maybe some people need to recognize in their life how God's working. And it's our responsibility to help them see it.